The goal of this web page is to demonstrate the original meanings of the words contemplation and action in early Christian sources and the way in which those meanings have become somewhat obscured in modern times. This page is divided up into four sections, each of which is intended, at least in the case of the first three, to enhance the other, to build upon the model that is suggested before. In section number one, I suggest that the basic rhythm of our lives is a movement back and forth between the poles of what we might term activity and receptivity. Doing things, being involved in projects, engaged in, and it doesn't necessarily mean outside of ourselves. And as we'll see, in the early tradition, the active life did not refer to anything specifically that you did, but rather had to do with the interior work of being actively engaged in the project of pursuing virtue. This pole, in a broader sense, is when we are actively engaged in attaining or trying, speaking or searching. I've given the notion of working here. But this pole naturally moves back and forth with a pole of receptivity, moments of listening, I've listed there perceiving, being, gently stepping back and allowing what we've been working at so hard to quietly seep in, the meaning to reach us. And in fact, both of these movements back and forth from one to the other have to be engaged with one another in an ongoing way. And we are in fact moving back and forth between these poles in all of our daily activities, whether it's our ordinary work at the tasks we've been assigned, whether it's conversation with another person, or engaging on a project we particularly enjoy. Our minds, our hearts, our innermost selves will always be moving back and forth between these two poles. That's normal, it's healthy and human, and in a very sense, it's the rhythm on which we build our understanding of the inner rhythm of our spiritual lives. In section number two, I've added to the idea of activity and receptivity the ancient terms active life or praktiki, particularly as Evagrius Ponticus calls it, but it's also a term that is used by Plato and in the early Platonic tradition, and the receptive pole being understood as theoretiki or the contemplative life. These are not separate, again, things that you do. They are not separate ways of life. They are both poles of human experience, and we move back and forth between them. We engage in the project of transforming, of cooperating with God in eliminating vices and allowing us to cultivate the virtues. And periodically, we are invited to step aside, to experience God in a more receptive mode. And this is a privileged moment, an experience of grace. This experience of receptive or contemplative experience, this vision beyond the surface, is not something we can create or force or in any sense manufacture through any technique. It happens, especially in its highest forms, as God gives it. We can prepare ourselves to experience it and to enjoy it. And if we're constantly about active things, we may well not stop and listen to or be aware of the more receptive mode of our life. We may not stop to look beneath the surface and behold God present in things. But other than preparing ourselves for those moments when they happen, you cannot create with a technique a contemplative state. This is very clear in the early tradition. And it's especially so when you drop down to number three and realize that in the monastic tradition, the word contemplation and contemplative life referred above all else to the mystical interpretation of the scriptures. The contemplative in the monastic tradition, in the early monastic tradition and up through into the Middle Ages, was one who could understand the scriptures, whether they were being read in Lectio Divina or experienced in the liturgy, in a contemplative, mystical way. That is what contemplation meant. And this was that middle pole that I've added to that model that was elaborated in numbers 1 and 2. Theoria physici. Now we're distinguishing between, if you will, a theologici, a contemplation of God beyond word or image, this grace-filled moment, very analogous to the experience of two people who love one another simply enjoying the opportunity for quiet, silent communion that occasionally happens, but which they cannot force, which can be enjoyed when it happens, but cannot be artificially created. The same thing exists in our spiritual lives and is often called theologia, or the theologiki, particularly in the writings of Evagrius. But between that and the active ascetical project of seeking after virtue and seeking to eliminate vice, between it and, as it were, mediating it, facilitating the movement from one to the other, is this very important central project of theoria physici, literally beholding God in creation or nature. Phusis means nature, but nature not just in the sense that we mean it in the modern world, in the sense of inanimate objects, but more particularly God in God's image. We see God in particular in the Word, which God gives us in the Scriptures. And so an important part of beholding God in creation is to see God in the created Scriptures, the stories which have come into existence as a result of human history, human experience of God, human meditation on those events and the power of the Holy Spirit. We engage in this very important middle kind of contemplation of God in creation whenever we turn to God in the Word, and also when taking the practice of Lectio Divina, the skills that finding God in the Word will teach us, and when we apply them to our beholding God in the presence of one another. It is in the presence of God in God's image, that is, in other people, which is much more important, particularly for early Christians and especially for monastics, much more important than finding God in inanimate nature. Contemplation of God in creation or nature did not mean finding God in trees or rivers or a retreat into the desert. On the contrary, it meant finding God in the presence of God's image, in the Word and the Scriptures, or in community, in those others who bear God's image. Now, I mention here as well that these three aspects, and again, remember, they are all moving into and out of one another. They are all, as it were, coexisting. You could speak of them metaphorically as three primary colors which make up one's spiritual palette, or are always present in the beautiful portrait of one's spiritual life that's constantly being painted. Or you could use a musical metaphor. They're three notes in an ongoing symphony, but you don't just have a single note playing. Christians do not simply stay in theologia, in the contemplation of God beyond word or image. They do not spend all their time simply in asceticism. They are always moving back and forth between these poles. And it is the movement itself in which the spiritual life consists. I've mentioned that there are words that came to be associated with these three aspects, in particular purgation, illumination, and union, which, as we'll see in the fourth step a little bit, just a minute or so, became a little bit problematic in the modern world. But before that, I've included a box that shows a picture of a kind of a purple spiral staircase, and that's a reminder to us of the fact that although this movement, this rhythm back and forth, as it were, around in the circle through practice, through finding God in ascetical work, through discovering God in creation and especially in the Scriptures, and then resting in the presence of God beyond word and image, this movement can seem to be a circle, but in fact, if you extend it over time, you find that it is a helix, a spiral movement that draws us towards God. So it is not just a recurrence, it is a movement towards God. In the modern era, unfortunately, this very dynamic model was rendered much more static. And instead of appreciating the inner penetration, the constant existence of all three together, there was a tendency to identify these three aspects as stages or steps. There was a tendency to speak of a purgative way, an illuminative way, and a unitive way. And while this may have a certain value in describing trends at particular points in one's spiritual life, or development, or spiritual maturity, or even age, they can be rather dangerous if they're taken too literally. The older, more dynamic model is probably something we need to resurrect, to rediscover, and feel comfortable working with. However useful these categories may be of ways or stages, nevertheless, all three movements must always be present, and the goal of spiritual life is to be comfortable, to accept with joy the movement from one kind of spiritual experience into the other.